Exodus chapter 21. And we'll start in verse 1. Exodus 21, verse 1. Now these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them. Now keep this in mind. First of all, I want you to understand, this is what's called the beginning of Israel's civic law. These chapters here used to be the basis for American and English civil law in what was called the Blackstone Commentaries. For example, if you read biographies of people like Abraham Lincoln, different people who went into the law, they'll tell you, and I got a hold of a copy of Blackstone and began to read. They wanted to understand, what are the rules for civil law? English civil law was brought out of this. Now, how strong was that? If you lived in England in the 1600s, 1700s, or something of that sort, and you were arrested for an act of parliament that you broke, if you could convince a judge that act of parliament broke part of these laws here, that judge would declare the act of parliament unconstitutional. He would void that law, okay? That was English civil law. And so English civil law, the whole English constitution then was a series of precedents. This judge stopped this, this one stopped that, okay? The whole idea of taxation by representatives was the idea that under Moses' law, you couldn't steal. Well, if you can't steal, could a government? No. Okay, why? Because the government's composed of men. Now, the men have the right to steal, so a government can't. Therefore, your representatives that you voted for had to come together and agree how much the tax would be. Therefore, any taxation without that was tyranny, okay? Based on Moses' civil law. All of American jurisprudence was based on it. Around 1900, Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. began to break that. He began to systematically try to wean American court opinions off of Moses' law, the Blackstone Commentaries. That's one of the huge issues today. Now they call it originalists or constitutionalists or whatever, but that's one of the huge issues. What is the basic bottom line? Now, if somebody were to ask, how long is a foot, okay? Well, it depends whether it's mine or Dustin's. But no, in other words, a foot's 12 inches. Well, what's an inch? Do you realize that in France, there is a bar, for example, kept in a safe of a certain material that is exactly 1 meter long, okay? Exactly. And they keep it where no erosion or anything can happen to it. Why? Because nowadays we measure things in angstroms, okay, which are 10,000ths in, you know, millionths of a meter, and that begins to be important. And so then they've redefined it based on when a certain amount of light goes through a certain crystal, how wide is the beam of light in it, and that is now how they calibrate how we measure things, okay? In other words, everything needs to have a measuring point. One of the best, and another great book, is a book called Measuring America. It's just called Measuring America. And it's a glorification of the surveyor's chain. In other words, when the surveyor's chain was invented for the first time in Europe, people could actually tell where their boundary was. It wasn't just generally this creek over here and, you know, the barn over there and such. And so, for example, the Lewis and Clark expedition traveled from Virginia to Oregon, back again, and they were only a few feet off in their reckoning on how far they went, okay? And using surveyor chains, dead reckoning, and such, they learned. And so one of the first things that happened in America was you actually could actually measure things. A man could say, this is my property, and it was a huge revolution in human rights in itself. People being able to do it, just the surveyor chain. I had somebody tell me, when you get over towards Salamaica, and you get over there, where limestone, I forget what the town or the limestone's in there, but when you get over there, limestone's a village within the township of
That nobody knows.
All right. But when you get over there, that's one place they actually had trouble and had to resurvey it. Because it was surveyed right after the Iroquois agreed to put down their guns, but they would take pot shots at surveyors. And so they're not real accurate over there. He said they had to kind of rework that again. Now, my father was Cattaraugus County civil engineer for the later 1970s and through the 1980s and such. And a Chautauqua County legislator began to complain that through the swamps over near Leon, New York and such, that the line wasn't right. So my father, in his spare time, went out, would take his crew, and they reran that whole boundary line. And he found the original Ellicott, the man who did what Ellicottville is named for, who did the original surveying in that back in the 1700s. He even found some of his surveyor markers exactly where they're supposed to be and such. You know what he said? He said that man wasn't an inch off. That line's exactly where it ought to be. Exactly, okay? So the thing is, why can we do that? Because they had an accurate system of measurement. Now, with the law, we need an accurate system of measurement. We need to know what's right, what's wrong. And let me tell you something. If you've ever been a mother stuck home with kids on a rainy day, sometimes that accurate system of measurement's a tough thing to find, all right? It's tough to find it sometime with things that are going on and such. And sometimes all you can do is just bend them all over and whip them. You know? I've done that before. Hannah used to hate this. I said, oh, you know what? I think you just all lying. Get in here. You know? And, but Dad, I wasn't the one. I'd say, well, think of how many things you got away with. You know? You know, I've made up my mind. You know, this is what we're going to do. And such. And just think of all the things you got away with. And then I tell them, I say, you know what the problem is? People are lying. And when I think about it, you know, with you kids, I'm not the one that started the lying. Somehow or other in our conversation, lies have been in here over these years, and I'm not the one that did it. So if you're right now getting a whipping you don't deserve, whose fault is it? I'm not the one that introduced lying to this family, all right? You know, I'm not the one that did that, and they just groan. Because they, you know, what do you say about that? But the point is, you need an accurate system of measurement. This is the Jew system of measurement, and this was the measurement in the United States up until around 1900. Now back to this thing again. Verse 2, if thou buy an Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve with thee, and the seventh year he shall go out for nothing. This is where indentured servitude came from. Okay? Many a time in England or America, a person would become so poor. For example, in the Irish potato famine, many people just died in their fields. Your children die, you just didn't have food. Well, one of the remedies for that is you could go into town and there would be a company that would buy you. And they'd buy your children. And then they would ship you to America, but it could only be for 7 years. Why? Because that was to the Hebrews, but because you're professing Christianity, they're Christians, no law could hold you for over 7 years. Okay? And so you would come over here as indentured servants. If you go back and trace, you'll find you had ancestors who came over here as indentured servants. Okay, that's how they came over. And at the end of 7 years, they were let go, and much of America was populated with that kind of thing. The big issue came in, what do you do with Africans that come in? All right? And that became a huge issue, whereas, for example, in the Revolutionary War, Massachusetts wrote the first constitution of any of the colonies as an independent state. They tried to ban slavery and they did not have the political power to do it. Mostly because the Boston merchants were fat and wealthy from the slave trade. So they couldn't get rid of it. So Massachusetts, Bunker Hill had slaves at it. Lexington Concord had slaves at it. They had some, Allegheny County was partly cleared with slave labor. Okay, you back find the records. But the thing is, they had these slaves. But here's what the difference was. In 1774, an abolitionist group in England had been suing a particular slave owner who had carried his slave to England. Now, the English wouldn't permit slavery based on this here. You could only be a slave for 7 years. But remember, they didn't think your rights extended to the colonies. So if you kept slaves in the colonies, that was fine. Well, somebody brought their slave to England, And then the abolitionist societies grabbed them away. Here's what the final ruling was by Lord Mansfield in 1774. He went through it all and he finally said, the air of England is too pure for a slave to breathe. The moment the air of England touches his nostrils, he is a free man. Okay? When the air of England touches his nostrils, there is no bondage. The only way you can have in bondage is agreement. So what did they do in Massachusetts? By that time, every single African American is a Christian. They can't be held any longer. So in Massachusetts, they literally left the fields and went to their local magistrates and said, I have been held over 7 years. By 1790, there was no more slavery in Massachusetts. Okay? It took till 1848 to get rid of it in Connecticut. 1827 to get rid of it in New York. You realize New Jersey had slaves during the Civil War? Still had 200 of them left, who were grandfathered in under a program of emancipation and such. But they did that based on this ruling that you could not hold your brother for longer than 7 years. Why did the South keep slaves? The South reverted to Roman law. Roman law is when a legislature overrules the common law. So the South then would come together and by a parliamentary or a legislative act would override the common law. How did they do that? Here's how they did it. What the South did, well, let's put it this way with the North. Allegheny County, I think, was established 1807, 1808, something like that. Cattaraugus County around the same time. If you lived in Allegheny County when it was made a county, for every 1,000 people, you got to send a certain amount of representatives to Albany, okay? I don't know if it made them stupid like it does today, but back then you could send them to Albany, okay? If you lived in Orange County or New York County or Westchester County, for every 1,000 people, you sent the same amount of people. It was a representative government. Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia would not do that. When their western counties got developed, for every 1,000 people, you might send one representative, but if you're in Albemarle County or one of the coastal counties in Charleston or something, you could send two representatives for every 1,000. Why? Because they knew that the western people would get rid of slavery. Okay? That's why West Virginia so easily seceded from Virginia during that. Why? Because, let me ask you a question. If you work with your hands, what would your labor be worth if men had slaves? Okay, not a lot. So for example, in Tennessee in the 1840s, you could lease a slave for $250 a year. All you had to do was feed him. So if some German immigrant came up and said, I'll tend your farm, why would you pay them more than $250 a year? Why would you do that? So as a result, all the immigrants mostly came to the North because it was free. Their labor was worth something. So the people in the West hated the slave system because it degenerated their labor, the very thing that they could do. In the eastern parts of the states, they frowned on labor. You were called working trash or white trash if you worked with your hands. You were considered something under. A man would save everything he had and buy a slave so him and his 5 sons could watch the one man work in the field. Many cases of that. So they didn't have to be accused of being white trash. Okay. So the thing is, in the South, they could never purge it of slavery. Let me give you an example. Thomas Jefferson backed a law like New York had. New York had, now this is an odd name, but a Natty Post-Emancipation Act. What it meant was that if you were a slave in 1827 over the age of 25, you would remain a slave for life. If you were under 25 years old, you would be emancipated upon turning 25. If you were born into slavery, you would remain a slave till 25. Okay? So slaves that were older than that, and eventually, as that worked out, it was harder and harder to hold slaves because there's all these free blacks walking around, and it fell apart. The largest slave plantation to ever exist in the United States was on Staten Island, part of New York City today. well over 1,000 slaves on that island. You know what its name was? It was called Dixie. Okay? That was the name. It was in New York City. It's called Dixie. Under that law, if your slaves agreed that they'd like to be sold down south to Alabama or Mississippi, and they signed that they'd like it, you could sell them down there. And somehow the old Dutchman got all 1,000 to sign it. Okay? And and so all of a sudden slaves pop up all over, and some of those grueling hard work they've ever had mourning for Dixie. If only they could be back in Dixie. And the original Dixie song actually talked about buckwheat, things that don't even grow down south. Most Southerners don't realize when they're singing Dixie, they're singing about New York City. Alright? Well, one of the greatest slave plantations that's ever existed. Alright? But the thing is, how did they get rid of it? They got rid of it because a nation was determined, only half a nation was determined to use the common law out of the Bible. The other half overrode that. So Thomas Jefferson tried to get Virginia to pass the same law. It failed by one vote in the Virginia legislature. You know why? Because all the western counties had less representatives than the eastern. Historians have looked at it. If Virginia had given equal representation to West Virginia, it would have stopped slavery right there. Can you imagine how much the history of the United States would have been different had that been the case? But instead, selfish slave owners on the coast would not let those farmers and those westerners have equal representation. It happened in North Carolina, it happened in South Carolina, it happened in Georgia, and it happened in Virginia. Okay? And as a result, the American Civil War broke out. When Charleston had its convention for seceding from the Union, they had 10 reasons they were seceding from the Union. Slavery is mentioned in every single one of them. Okay? Every single one of them. So, again, they got rid of the measuring stick. The measuring stick is the book of Hebrews. I want you to look here. Verse 2, if thou buy a Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing. If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master was given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and his children shall be her masters. And shall go out, and he shall go out by himself. That was one of the dangers. If a man came into that system, she's got 6 years left, you've got 1 year left, better wait till you're free before you marry her, she's free, all right? Otherwise, she stays there, all right? Verse 5, and if the servant say plainly, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free. That has happened, okay? Where a man would say to himself, you know, I've got a good position on this farm here. It's a good one. I've got a wife. I've got children here. I love this. I have a good, you know, the man that I'm working for is fine and such. There are many, many cases of that recorded in history, okay? Then his master shall bring him unto the judges. He shall also bring him to the door or under the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. Now, right off the bat, Ruth Ann will tell you, when my daughter was young, we pierced her ears. Why? It's a sign of subjection. It's God's sign. Okay? I raised my daughter to be in subjection to a man. That's God's sign of subjection. You know what I found with every man that ever pierces his ear? He's usually under the rule of a woman. You watch. You watch. He'll be some big, tough guy, got an ear, you know. And that little girl, she winds him all around and he does whatever she says, okay? You'll see a lot of older guys now who blew and destroyed their first three marriages or whatever. You'll see him, he thinks he's so cool, that ear, and he's got some woman with him. He's trying to show her I'm snazzy and I'm cool or whatever. He'll wear that thing and such. But again, God built it into the human psyche. It's a sign of subjection. Yes, ma'am. I did. And I was under the rule of a woman. And I was. It was shameful. I still got the scar there from it. All right? Now, I want you to go with me to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 25. You know, the problem when we study the American Civil War is everybody studies the war itself and nobody studies the 50 years before the war, what brought it about. Okay? Proverbs 25. And go to verse 12. As an earring of gold, or an ornament of fine gold, so is a wise reprover upon an obedient ear. As an earring of gold, an ornament of gold, that wise reprover. Okay, what do we mean by that? You know what? Pastor Hayne, come up here. Sometimes he reproves us. Now what's the difference between reproof and rebuke? Rebuke is, Chris, I told you I hate green shirts like that. Never wear a green shirt like that again. All right, that's a rebuke. Okay? A reproof would be, now Tanya, you know that when you come in here, you know, if you're in a bad mood and such, your kids are going to pick it up. That's a reproof. I'm explaining to her gently what she's done wrong. Okay? The rod and reproof. See? The rod and reproof. If a child's getting a whipping and doesn't understand what it's for, he doesn't deserve it. Okay? If you have to sit and explain to a child why you're whipping them, they don't deserve it. That's why a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. You watch. You know what I did with my children? When I did it right. My children tell you many times I did it wrong. But when I did it right, I would come in and say, these are the rules. Then he'd stand there. One would break the rules, just walk back, grab his arm. He's in the middle of it. He knows. I don't have to scream at him the whole way. I told you this. I told you that. It's like, you know why you scream at him like that? Because you let him get away with it the first 22 times. Because you were too busy. You didn't want to pay attention. You're in a bad mood. Blah, 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 blah. Now suddenly you're really over the... No. That's the cruelest thing that you have ever done. Cruel beyond measure. The most kind thing you can do to children is be consistent. I'd rather you're consistently wrong than inconsistently right. Okay? Your children will actually be better off. I don't like you being consistently wrong, but there's something about it. I've watched children raised with no rules. I've watched children raised with too many rules. And to be honest with you, if I had to go, I'd rather the ones with too many, and I hate that. But if I had to go between the two, that'd be the way I'd lean. Okay? But it goes back to that thing being consistent where they just don't. And you want to know something? They are the happiest children you will ever find anywhere. They're dear, they're happy, their lives are bleak. When you have children and the parents are inconsistent and they let them get away with three times and then running and catch them, it's like Russian roulette for the children. Okay? It's Russian roulette. That's an awful way to be. So that wise reprover upon an obedient ear, it's the same thing as saying, I love my master. And you say, that reprover, I will take him and I will allow them to pierce my ear and I will listen to that person. And I will be in subjection to that reproof. I will listen to it. I will do that. And let me tell you something. Sometimes it stings because every reprover makes mistakes. Sometimes it stings because of things that go on. But that's a wise person. He subjects himself to that. And that's what God calls the circumcision of the ear. Okay. That circumcision of the ear. God told Israel, your ears are uncircumcised and therefore you cannot hear. You won't let the law speak to you. You won't let anybody come to you and reprove you of these things, and so you won't hear. You know, Dale and Tanya are both in the same boat. Both have been so cruelly used by people who raised them. Blamed for things they never did. Things blown all out of proportion that they did do wrong and such, that after a while, they hate anybody who's going to come and tell them anything to do, okay? They're wounded. Ask Miss Pam Wolfren, who's had to take dogs in like that. You know, they eventually fall in love with you, but it took a long time for them to ever trust a human hand. It took a long time for them to ever trust just a quick movement in the room, okay? Long time, and children are the same way, and then they grow into adults, and they're so abused and such, and they're not going to let anybody pierce that ear, but anybody put them in subjection to something like that. Never. They're not going to allow it. What a grief. What a terrible thing to do to people. Okay? A, let the law of God reprove you. B, be consistent with your children. It's the kindest thing you will ever do. Okay. I have met liberals who don't believe in any spanking. I have met liberals who don't believe, and many who and such, who really have wonderful children because they were consistent in their discipline the entire way through. You know, and again, I think those children suffer. I think there's times they should have had corporal punishment, but that consistency went so far with them. Okay? All right. Pastor Hayne, why don't you close us?
One of the things in studying that business of the slaves saying, I don't want to go out free, my understanding is they were taking to the doorpost, which is what the Bible says,
yep.
And it was the upper part of the ear that they would put against the doorpost, because this can grow shut, where they would pierce the cartilage, and it would stay open longer.
That wound is still there.
Yeah, well, the wound is, but it, the hole's shut.
And so,
now, the reason I asked Pat to go to the piano is I have been thinking about this song for several times, and it just never seemed to fit. And we've been talking about slaves, whether bought slaves, indentured slaves, and whatever. And thank God, I am free. Free, free. If you'll play it. Like a bird out of prison. Like a bird out of prison, I've taken my flight. Like a blind man that God gave back his sight. Like a poor wretched beggar who'd found fortune and fame. I'm so glad that I found out he would bring me out through his holy name.
I can take two.